Well, we definitely had a good week. I thought first off beating Indiana State on Tuesday, Johnny, was certainly a good win because it was a bounce back situation in a lot of different ways, particularly after coming losing on Sunday. So just bouncing back and then being able to play well this weekend at certain times. Yesterday was certainly a tough day just from a hitting standpoint, but a lot of that had to do with Alabama's pitching, and we won a game in a different way, which is always nice to see too. Winning a two-run game on the road to complete a series is very difficult to do regardless of who the opponent is. So in retrospect, it was a good week. Now we move forward.
You know, during your tenure as head coach at Vanderbilt, you've seen a lot of solid pitchers come through and advance all the way to the major leagues. You know, talk if you would about Patrick Raby. He's now in second place all by himself in Vanderbilt history. 28 career wins now with what he was able to do over the weekend, which leaves him now just one shy of tying Jeff Peoples' record of 29 that was set back from 1970 to 73.
Well, I think that just kind of explains who he is. He's a winning kid. When we saw him at Farragut, that was what we kept coming back to. This guy just wins. He finds ways to win baseball games. And, you know, he's won state titles. He's won a lot of games in high school. He's won a lot of games at the championship level. And now, you know, at Vanderbilt, he's done the same thing. You know, even as a young freshman, he pitched a lot for us in a starting rotation. And I think going back to his sophomore year, I think what people may forget is he was our number one pitcher. He was our Friday night pitcher before Kyle Wright. And it was just because of the winning contributions that he gave us. But he's just steady Eddie. He's one of those guys who, you know, he always gives you a chance to win. He keeps a very consistent personality and attitude towards what he's doing. And it just shows you what, if you allow yourself to remain in college for 4 years, some of the benefits that you get along with it. And now his name at some point hopefully will go in the record book as the winningest pitcher of all time at Vanderbilt, God willing. And, you know, as long as his health is good, but he's just been a steady, steady presence on our team for 4 consecutive years.
If you would, let's turn to the other side and look at your hitters, starting with J.J. Bleda. 20 home runs now. 20 home runs. He has 14 home runs in the last 17 games. Now, we've talked about sometimes when you're in that kind of groove, the baseball looks like a grapefruit. I guess this is like a beach ball or something else. Explain that groove right now that he's going through.
Well, you know, when you're watching it, and you know, I've kind of thought about him and thought about years of kids that I've been fortunate to be around. One of them was Khalil Green when I was at Clemson, who ended up becoming a major league shortstop at 475 his senior year and hit 28 home runs. And when you're watching that go on, you know, you're in amazement of sometimes the consistency of how that's going. And JJ's along the same lines. I mean, it's a young guy that's a hitter first. And I guess the question I've gotten, Johnny, is did you ever think that he'd hit this amount of home runs? I can't tell you yes, but I wouldn't say no, because I think he's just the type of kid that he gets to the center of the ball frequently. He doesn't try to recruit power. He tries to hit the ball in the middle of the field. And because of that, he benefits from hitting home runs on both sides, as he did this weekend. You know, you hit him left field, hit him to right field, hit him right center field. So he's just that kid that takes a very consistent approach to everything that he's doing. And I know we've talked about him before, but that's kind of his life. I mean, he's consistent in the classroom. He's all A's in the classroom right now. He's just focused on one thing, and that's just trying to help the team get better. And because of that, he's reaping the rewards.
When we talk about these kind of things, he understands, obviously, I mean, and most of your guys, I mean, one of the things that they have dreams of, they want to get drafted and they want to have a, you know, professional career. Is he the type of individual that he understands those good things will happen and he's just out there just to enjoy himself each and every day and be the best he can, not really worried about that? Because it's you know, you hear great coaches talk about this all the time, about players who are performing at this kind of level, in the sense that they know good things will happen for them, so they're just out there doing the best they can on a daily basis.
Well, I would say yes, but in order to get to that level, you have to have a sense of maturity. And, you know, as my wife always jokes, she goes, JJ's the type of guy that drops his kids off at school, kisses his wife goodbye, then just shows up at our ballpark to train and play with our young guys, because that's how he is. He's a, you know, he's a 40-year-old man in a 21-year-old body, and that's the kind of presence you get from his attitude, from his personality, and I think what goes along with that is consistency in behaviors. And to your point, he doesn't put up those numbers if his mind is anywhere else, because the thing that, at least from an experience standpoint, that I have an advantage of is watching a lot of people go through their junior years or whatever it is year that could be a potential draft situation for them. And I don't want to say draft year because I don't even like those words, but he's focused on what he's doing right now. That's it. You know, the guys that aren't, they don't perform well academically. They're not centered. And because of that, there's a lot of pressures put on themselves. Maybe their parents are putting pressure on them. But this guy, he just keeps everything very simple. It's just about playing. It's just trying to get better. And he doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. I mean, if there's any kid that we've been around that is the safest money that you possibly could bet on, it's him. It's just he's that kid. He's just wired right, and he acts right, and because of that, he benefits well.
You know, it's interesting. I know we've had this conversation where it starts in the classroom, you know, for your players. And in situations like this, when you're watching J.J. Bleday and his approach, or if you're talking about Patrick Raby, what he's been able to get accomplished in his career at Vanderbilt, there's also that other process, learning process, where, you know, other members of your team can learn from those guys as far as their approach to the game.
No doubt, and that's what, my side conversations with the younger guys are, just attach yourself to these kids right now. They're going to be gone, and when they're gone, you no longer will have that model in front of you. And I think it's just important right now for younger guys to really, in their mind and in the notebooks we give them, write down their thoughts on what's happening in front of them right now, because what ideally they want to do is recreate the behaviors that they see of success. And if they can see those and be attached to them, most likely they can fall on that track too. And you just mentioned Raby and Bleday, but...
Oh, there's others.
Yeah, there's, Ethan Paul and Stephen Scott. Those are the top students on our team. And there's a reason why they fall into success. It's just being able to be centered and, you know, granted, they have fun, but at the same time, they're mature enough to understand what this is about. And they really care about doing things that they haven't done yet. And that is trying to take this team to a level that they haven't been in the 4 years that they've been here. So even though the end all goal is something special, they're centered on what they're doing right now in order to get to that goal. And I appreciate that as an older coach.
Tim Corbin joining us again. You know, you've been blessed, but, you know, it's not luck that has put you in this situation. And I start with the fact that, you know, each and every year when we talk about the members of your team, we talk about a word called, you know, being unselfish. And, you know, it's one of these things where you would just assume that all teams, no matter what sport you're talking about, no matter what school you're talking about, that's the case, you know, from the West Coast to the East Coast. But that's not the case at all. But I really, truly believe it starts with recruiting, the type of player that you recruit to bring to Vanderbilt. And because maybe there's an isolated case here and there, but for the most part, during your career at Vanderbilt, that's one of the things that, you know, that's the consistent part of your team, is the fact it's usually built up with these unselfish players.
Yeah, that certainly is a trait that we look for. And then, be it the first day they get here, that becomes something that we spend a lot of time talking about and spend a lot of time really centering ourselves on, because to your point earlier, that's the only way strides can be made individually. I mean, you make them as a team, and when you unify. And because you unify, your clarity is on the group, or you're clear about what you want to do, because it helps the group. But when when you're centered on one thing and you're centered on your own individual goals, then you don't reach them, and it's not as fulfilling. And I think what's fulfilling and what makes this special is the fact that these guys are able to do it together. And because they're able to do it together, they have a strong emotion towards one another. And because they have a strong emotion towards one another, then 5, 6, 7, 8 years down the road, those are the same people that are in their weddings and that are spending time together. And I think that's really what it gets back down to, is through sport and through baseball, they're developing these strong relationships that will last them a lifetime, and that's special.
And that's not an easy thing. You know, everybody, when I throw that out there, everybody just assumes, oh, that's no big deal. Just tell them to be unselfish, and bam, we move on. But when you think about the fact that you're going after players that a lot of major league teams want to in their organizations, you know, that's the kind of player you're talking about as far as abilities are concerned. And in most cases, they're used to getting all that extra attention when they're in high school because they're the best of the best. And, I mean, that's one of those things that we just assume that's a part of that. But you know, I'm of all the things that we've discussed, I don't think we've ever really given that part of it enough thought, because it really is a true testament to you and the rest of the coaches and the players that have come through your program since you've been there.
Well, and that's the focus. I mean, I'm telling you, it's every day. It's every day in the classroom. It's every day on the field. It's a vitamin. It has to be, because if you just think you're going to go on a whitewater rafting trip with your team and say this is a team building trip, those trips mean very, very little. They don't mean anything. What means everything is the interaction that you have with your guys every day. And you know, something as small as when you get out of the batting cage and take your swings, you have to walk up to the next guy coming in the cage, look him in the eye, and fist bump him, and then leave. But there's just small instances like that that are kind of woven into the fabric of what we do every single day, because what they do is they connect, they communicate, they allow us to, you know, grow. And that part right there, for males in particular, who are very good at what they do, who have always been told how good they are at what they do, start believing that they are that type of person, and then before you know it, they start attending their own church rather than the church of many. And I think the biggest thing with us is just the ability to get away from that notion and move as far away as you can, because once you start to get away from it, then you start to understand how unhealthy that is to even think that way. So yeah, for us, that's just kind of how we go about business every single day.
Tim, we didn't get a chance to talk about this last week, but last week, a ruling, you know, they were trying to decide whether or not to add an extra paid assistant as far as college baseball was concerned. It gets voted down. It's something that, you know, maybe it got voted down last week, but it's certainly something that needs to be looked at again down the road. How does that impact college baseball?
I'm sick to my stomach. I'm virtually sick to my stomach. I could throw up when that was said. I mean, and ruled that we're not done with it yet. I'm telling you, Johnny, we're not done with it. It just irritates the hell out of me, because what it does is it closes the doors for so many people. I'm not even worried about Tim Corbin and Vanderbilt. I'm worried about the people that someday will have Tim Corbin's position that can't have Tim Corbin's position, because they're not going to get the experience that will allow them to grow into something like this. It just infuriates me. It hurts the sport. It stunts the growth of the sport. It doesn't allow our sport to grow in numbers. It doesn't allow people who want to be involved in our game to get there, because the doors are closed. So they have to either remove themselves from baseball, or they have to go into professional baseball. And some of the best coaches that we've had in this game are moving into professional baseball. But I'm personally not done with it. I mean, we had to travel today to South Carolina to go to a funeral of the person who started my career at Presbyterian College. So we're traveling back. But once I get back to my desk and start the process of looking at this, then I'm going to, that's a mission. That's a mission of mine personally, to make sure that that's put in place. And that's not good enough for me personally. I know it's not good enough for the majority either. So we'll have to do something about that.
By the way, my thoughts and prayers, certainly, as far as concerned, starts mm-hmm. with the three-game series on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, with Auburn coming to town, another matchup of two teams ranked in the top 21 in the nation. What's mm-hmm. this week like for your team?
Tough one, just because it's exam week, and they've got the last day of school is today, and tomorrow is reading day, and they'll have a lot of study sessions that they need to go to. Then it begins Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So they've got a lot on their plate. I'm always very happy for them once they're done because it's a strong sense of relief. But they'll be done next week, but they'll work through that and be in exams right up until and during batting practice leading up to these Auburn games. So we have to go through this every year, but it's okay. It's part of what we do. But the Auburn series, again, I'm glad we're home. I'm glad we don't have a midweek game. Auburn's very good. They drubbed us pretty good last year at their place, and they're playing well again. So it'd be another great challenge. And as I've always told you, and you know, the best team in the SEC is the one you're playing. So that's Auburn this week, and we look forward to that challenge. It'll be a reprieve for the guys just to get away from academics for maybe 2.5 days. But they got a lot on their plate right now, so we'll help them along.